Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Richard Rosenblatt, and I represent CWA Local 7717. This is a case of first impression in Colorado. When an individual works for a nonprofit on a volunteer basis, and he only receives compensation for those limited times when his volunteer work causes him to miss paid time from his employer, is he entitled to unemployment compensation? The ICAO, the panel, said no. The union disagrees and asked for this court, in its de novo review, to rule that in these circumstances, an individual is not entitled to unemployment compensation. This case strikes at the heart of the policies and purposes of unemployment compensation. Section 8-73-108, the provision cited by appellee as the one that the panel correctly limited its review to, states that the division at all times be guided by the principle that unemployment insurance is for the benefit of persons unemployed through no fault of their own, and each eligible individual who is unemployed through no fault of their own is entitled to benefits. Colorado courts, as well as courts throughout this country, have explained that unemployment compensation, like other social welfare legislation, serve the purpose to restore the portion of the earnings suffered through wage loss. Here, the claimant, Mr. Costello, loss of his role as union president did not cause him to be unemployed. As a result of his loss of his role as union president, he did not have to suffer any wage loss. The reason for both of these is simple. As the union president, he was only compensated when his compensation was purely reimbursement for times when he was otherwise scheduled to work.
Mr. Rosenblatt, my recollection is that there is a difference of view in the party's briefs about whether or not Mr. Costello actually did return to work.
Well, actually, it's what happened, Your Honor. In the record, when Mr. Costello was... when Mr. Costello testified, he testified that he lost his job as union president because with Quest, he went on disability leave, and when you're on disability leave, you couldn't be union president anymore. The union witness, we probably should have walked away at that point and accepted that as the decision, because if you're on disability, you don't have a right to unemployment compensation. But the union representative testified that actually the facts were that he lost his role as union president when the local merged with another local who already had a president. And the hearing officer credited that determination of what the union representative said, even though the hearing officer at one point said, I find Mr. Costello's testimony to be persuasive on that particular point, they obviously the hearing officer did not find Mr. Costello's testimony to be persuasive and found that he lost his job because he lost his role as union president because of the merger. So the record as it stands is that at the time he lost his role as union president, he was on disability, receiving disability pay from, that's the way to read the record consistent, that he was receiving disability pay from Quest. He wasn't unemployed from Quest. Had he been unemployed from Quest, then he would have had a right to file for unemployment insurance for his loss of his employment from Quest. The key was here that the loss of his role as union president did not affect his continued employment with Quest. If he had performed his job as local union president completely during a time when he was not scheduled to work at Quest, he would have received no reimbursement from CWA, and according to the way they came down, he would have received no unemployment compensation. This is really no different than his reimbursement for expenses for which he's not entitled. The purpose, if he had incurred expenses as a local union officer, he would have been reimbursed for those lost expenses. He was only reimbursed when he gave up his wages at Quest in order to work at the local office. If he scheduled a meeting, for example, that went 4 hours and 2 hours were during his scheduled Quest time when he was taking union leave, and 2 hours performing the same thing were after hours, the union would only reimburse him for two of those hours, not all 4 hours. He wasn't being paid for his services performed. He was simply being reimbursed for what he lost to make sure that he was made whole. Just like with expenses. If he incurred expenses in his role as union president, he was reimbursed, so it didn't cost him money to be union president.
And Mr. Rosenblatt, I understand, though, that the union considered his the amounts that it paid to Mr. Costello as wages and deducted taxes from the money that it paid to him.
The union did treat what he received. They did take taxes out of those.
So doesn't that make it sound like he was earning wages from the union's perspective as opposed to something equivalent to reimbursement of expenses?
Well, I think I'm not sure that he was, that they didn't put everything into there and just tax it. I really don't know how that worked. But I think the answer is that it's clearly income, so it was clearly taxable under IRS code. Whether or not they paid unemployment, workers' comp, things like that, I don't know what advice they relied on. Obviously, if anyone had looked up the case law in this state, they wouldn't have known the answer of whether or not you should be paying the unemployment compensation in this circumstance, because there is no case law that describes it. That's my guess.
Mr. Rosenblatt, if this had been a reimbursement, say, for mileage, would that have been income for IRS purposes?
I think it depends what the reimbursement rate is.
Let's say it's just the IRS rate.
It wouldn't be.
All right. So how is, but this is different. I mean, this was reported as wages and withheld as wages, whereas a reimbursement for mileage, in my example, or a reimbursement for expenses wouldn't be reported as wages, and taxes wouldn't be withheld.
Right. I understand that difference. Well, I guess what I'm saying, Your Honor, is that the union, either they sought advice who had no answer, or they just decided to treat it as wages, but that they weren't acting as a waiver to his right to whether or not he'd receive unemployment benefits or any other benefit. I mean, I don't think that in these circumstances that acts as a waiver and says because they paid it, he should receive it. I mean, there's plenty of times you pay unemployment compensation for an individual and that individual ends up not receiving unemployment. Or it could be, I mean, there's times when you treat things as wages in a settlement. You pay all the taxes on that. That doesn't mean that that makes you eligible to have to pay unemployment compensation for that individual. So there are circumstances where you pay it, and perhaps they shouldn't have paid it. Perhaps they should have 1099'd it, but that's not the way they went. But I don't think that is the determination of whether or not this, whether or not under the policies and purposes of the unemployment compensation laws, he should receive unemployment. I could roll out a million different hypotheticals that would show the problems with this. For example, if he continued his employment with Quest and he receives unemployment from out of the state. And he doesn't miss any time with Quest. Isn't that a form of double dipping? I mean, isn't that receiving two compensations? Because had he not lost any time with Quest and he performed his union role at another time, he wouldn't have received compensation from reimbursement from CWA. But here, he would now be getting his full wages from Quest plus unemployment, which is demonstrably more than he would get if in the current situation. In the current situation, his wages would never be above what he earned at Quest. But under this scenario, his wages would be what he earned at Quest plus the additional unemployment compensation.
Well, but there's a separate eligibility question. If he does not lose any wages from Quest, that's an eligibility question, such that he would be disqualified eligibility-wise from receiving these benefits, so he wouldn't get the double dip.
Well, and the panel found that that should be a separate hearing on the question of eligibility, citing, I think it's DeBalco. I would argue that this is different than that eligibility question because this goes to the heart. In cases like that, like DeBalco, what happens is the person is separated from employment, and then there is an issue. At that particular, there's no dispute that at that moment they are unemployed. Then the eligibility question comes up is, on a going forward basis, after they've been unemployed, are they still unemployed because they got another job, whether it's with the successful employer or a different employer? That's not the case here. In this case, he was never unemployed.
He was never unemployed by Quest.
He was never unemployed by Quest. And so he's at the same level the whole time. Another example would be if he had, let's say they merged and he took a different role within the union. So he had a different office within the union. The wage loss provisions of the union apply to anyone who takes union leave. But let's say that union office, that other union office, required less scheduled hours during work time for him to perform the job. So now instead of averaging 20 hours a week, and I'm just throwing numbers out because I don't think it's in the record and I have no idea, 20 hours a week as union president during scheduled Quest time, he has 0 hours a week as union vice president with this newly merged union, but he continues to work at Quest this whole time, so his compensation on a weekly or annual basis doesn't change. Is he entitled to unemployment compensation in that case because he's taken a different role within the union that due to the mere fortuity of scheduling, of when you schedule things, he gets the unemployment? That's what this case has come down to. This case has come down to a fortuity. Had he scheduled all his time during non-Quest time, he would receive zero reimbursement from the union.
I thought the record showed that it was the union requesting that he work during particular hours.
No, it was when they set up meetings and such.
Well, and that's not out of his control. They say, we've got a meeting, you need to go to it. And he says, but I'm scheduled to work then. That's not him deciding what his schedule for the union is going to be. The union deciding what his schedule is going to be.
I wasn't suggesting that he could control it. I'm just saying it's still the mere fortuity. I mean, if Quest said, let's have the meeting at 4 o'clock and his hours happen to be 7 to 3, which some people are scheduled, and Quest says, let's have the meeting at 4, then the mere fortuity of when it's scheduled would decide whether or not he got reimbursement. It could still be done what is normal business hours, but not during his work time.
Well, there's no dispute, obviously, that if he'd worked for Quest earning the same amount, that's wages. He earns that exact amount working while he's working for the union, and that payment, had it come from Quest, that would have been wages, is now transformed under your view of things. It's no longer wages, even though it's the same amount and it's for time that he's working for the union.
Right, and I point to the case out of Missouri, which I've cited in my brief, which is exactly the same facts as this case. And what they explained in that case on that, to that particular point, was that wages are for services performed, and where it's purely reimbursement for lost wages, it's not based on the value of the service performed. It's not based on the time of the service performed. It's merely based on the schedule of when the service is performed. And in that particular case, they don't find that to be wages as contemplated under the law.
Rosenblatt, I see your time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Tricia Lakey. I represent the Industrial Claim Appeals Office in this case, the panel. My attorney registration number is 39942. I'm using real-time captioning equipment. Please bear with me in using it. This is an unemployment benefits case where Communication Workers of America, a union, is challenging the panel determination that Mr. Costello is entitled to an award of unemployment compensation benefits under Section 873-108 based on his separation from the union. I'm going to focus on 2 points. First, a plain reading of the wage and employment provisions of the Colorado Employment Security Act compelled the conclusion that the union's payments to Mr. Costello were wages falling within covered employment. Moreover, the act requires that wages from all employers within a claimant's base period should be considered in determining compensation. Second, Colorado bifurcates eligibility versus entitlement proceedings with respect to unemployment compensation. The proceeding before this court concern entitlement proceedings under Section 108. The union's contention that Mr. Costello did not in fact lose wages or was disabled are monetary issues to be addressed in eligibility proceedings. We simply don't have a record before us where we have much of a documentation on these types of facts. First argument, the payments from the union to Mr. Costello were wages and fall within covered employment for the purposes of the act. Wages are defined as all remuneration for personal services. That's in Section 870-141. There is no exemption for union payments from the types of remuneration covered by the statute. The union paid Mr. Costello for the services he performed for the union during his regular quest time. He submitted documentation.
Ms. Lakey, I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's really the nub of it here. Whether he was paid for personal services to the union. Had Mr. Costello performed these services during hours in which he was not scheduled to work for Quest, he would not have been paid anything by the union. So given that it's merely, as counsel says, the fortuity of when he was working as opposed to what he was doing, that he got any remuneration, how can we say that the wages are being paid for personal services to the union? In other words, on one day he gets paid for them, on the other day he doesn't.
I think it depends on the scope of the time you're looking at. Mr. Costello was being paid for his services during certain hours, and he was not being paid for his services during certain other hours. The fact that he was being paid during those hours that he worked for the union during his regular quest time is remuneration for those particular hours. It doesn't mean that he must be paid wages for all his services to the union or that he was entitled to. It's just that for certain hours of the day, he made himself available to the union for compensation. If he had not made, if he was not being paid by the union, he presumably would not have agreed to forfeit a certain amount of his wages from Quest. He had approval for absences to conduct union business, but he wasn't going to be paid by Quest for those times that he missed work.
But to use a hypothetical, as an employee of any employer, I may agree to go on a business trip for that employer, but the understanding is that I will do so long as I am reimbursed for my expenses for the company. So my plane fare or what have you, my mileage. So I get a reimbursement, and so there is a quid pro quo there, just as you are positing here. But it seems to me that the mere fact of a quid pro quo doesn't necessarily mean that the reimbursement, or whatever you want to call it, that he receives is a wage for services performed.
Well, I think that if you just look at the statute, it says that all remuneration for personal services, he's working for the union, he's serving the union during those hours, and he's getting remuneration for it. I think that the plain meaning of the statute indicates that is wages for the purposes of the act. And there are no exemptions for unions or wage loss reimbursement that would take this type of payment outside of the Unemployment Security Act. And I think it also raises questions about, for example, Mr. Rosenblatt said that Mr. Costello, it didn't cost him money to be union president. Well, under their approach, it seems like it would cost him money to be union president, because in an ordinary case, you look at all of the claimant's base period employers in determining the amount of wages he's entitled to. Well, it would seem that under their approach, the union's wages would not be counted toward his wages for the purposes of unemployment benefit. So,
I know that's if he was no longer employed by Quest, in your hypothetical. So if he's no longer employed by Quest, you're saying that it's possible the department might decide that whatever portion of the wages he was paid by the union don't count in determining the wage credits. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. I mean, in this case, we have a sketchy record. We don't know exactly what happened to Mr. Costello, but he is receiving unemployment compensation benefits. So presumably he's unemployed. And if you look at his base wage period, it would seem that the proper approach is to look at Quest as an employer plus the union as an employer. So as a very basic example, let's say in a given week, Mr. Costello worked 30 hours for Quest, 10 hours for the union. Under the union's approach, it would seem that he would get credit for the 30 hours that he worked for Quest, but he would not be credited for those 10 hours that he worked for the union, because those would not be wages for the purposes of the act. So now he is somewhat damaged, to use that word, by 10 hours. Under the panel's approach, the panel would count both Quest and the union as his employers during the base period, and they would credit him the 40 hours in all for his work performed. I think that approach is consistent with the purposes of the act, and it also makes sense. I don't think that union employees would contemplate that being willing to do union business during regular working hours would cost them, should they become unemployed and they need to collect unemployment compensation benefits. I don't think they would contemplate that suddenly all those hours that they worked for the union per week would not be factored into the measurements in calculating their wages.
Ms. Lakey, you said several minutes ago that you thought that Mr. Costello could raise or should raise his claim in an eligibility proceeding rather than this as an entitlement proceeding. Could he still do that, or is the time come and gone for him to file anything as an eligibility challenge?
Yes, I believe he could bring an eligibility proceedings entitlement. I'm not entirely certain how the statute works in that respect, but based on the case law, it seems like these are considered very separate proceedings, and they run on different schedule, and determining whether someone's entitled to benefits is sort of a preliminary type of determination. Do they get into the door, so to speak, into the system? Once he's in the door, then the union is absolutely entitled to go and challenge whether he was actually able to work. There's some question about whether he's disabled or not. I would hesitate to say he was disabled. The record is just very sketchy. It was not a 107 eligibility proceeding, so we don't really know whether he was able, available, and actively seeking work. We don't have information about those prongs. So I would say that, yes, the union absolutely would be able to challenge those types of things, but it would have to be in that type of proceeding. In a 108 proceeding, the only question before this hearing officer was he entitled to benefit based on his separation from the union? And presumably, he would have this exact same type of proceeding under Quest if Quest so chose to do that. We have no idea what happened with Quest in this record, which is we just have the union documents in front of us. But presumably, it works the same for both sides, both employers.
Can we go back to the definition of wages, which I think you said was really what we need to look at? All remuneration for personal services. I have two questions. First, if we're sticking with that definition, what effect, if any, does the way the union treated this remuneration for tax purposes, what bearing does that have on whether it's remuneration for personal services? And secondly, I'll get both questions out. How is remuneration for personal services different from reimbursement for personal services? My example would be, I get a contract to provide, I don't know, legal seminars to the AG's office, and I get reimbursed for the copying charges that I incurred in making all these copies. That's not remuneration for my services, but something else. Sorry for the long questions, but you see where I'm going with that.
Yes. Well, with respect to your first question, I do think that it sheds some light on the question that the union did treat these payments as wages and they paid taxes accordingly. I think that was understood that these were wages. And I think for the purposes of the Unemployment Compensation Act, it is wages. It should be treated as wages in order to keep his average weekly earnings consistent with, say, a 40-hour work schedule. I'm not sure that's what he worked. I'm just making that up. But otherwise, you have a result where somebody who is entitled to a 40-hour work week and is excused from absences by his employer is somehow dinged for those hours that he's spending on union business. I don't think that's what's contemplated by the union or the union workers that agreed to take that duty on. And then moving on to the remuneration for personal services, well, certainly there can be questions about, well, is making Xerox copies, employment or working, doing personal services. I think that there could be a gray area between those types of things where you do something specific, like a task like that, and are reimbursed for those types of tasks. Here, it seems like the overall totality of the circumstances is indicating a situation where he is working a regular job, a 40-hour work week job. That's defined by Quest, his schedule at Quest. This work for the union comes, it has an interplay with that structure underlying the agreement between the parties. And so I think there's a little bit more concrete tie-in that's present in this type of scenario where you have somebody missing work and being excused from work for the specific purposes of union business. That's part of a bargaining agreement that was reached between the union and the employer. So this is a bit more of a discrete negotiated situation in this case. I see I'm starting to run out of time. Let's see. I wanted to address briefly the union's assertions about Mr. Costello not having suffered any wage loss. We just don't know that's true based on this record. And I think that the panel was rightfully hesitant to make any kind of conclusions based on that. They observed that the record's somewhat inconsistent. What we do have is a clear finding from the hearing officer that Mr. Costello was entitled to unemployment benefits based on his separation from the union. That's a clear finding that we have. And to go beyond that and say whether or not he suffered wage loss really goes to issues whether he's available for work. If he actually did leave his union employment and go directly to Quest and did not suffer any job loss, that goes to whether he was available and was in fact working for somebody else. If the question is whether he's disabled, then that's another eligibility issue. The question there in a 107 proceeding would be, is he able to work? And if he's not able to work, then, and he's getting a disability benefit, that leads the division down that path instead. If there are no further questions from the division, I'll go ahead and conclude. For the reasons stated in the answer brief and in my arguments today, the panel respectfully requests that this court affirm its decision.
Thank you, Ms. Lakey. That concludes the arguments for this case. The case will stand submitted and a written opinion will issue in due course. I want to thank both counsel for their fine arguments this afternoon. We appreciate them.